Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Race IndyCar podcast. Coming up this week, rookie sensation David Malukas joins us. But before that, of course, I have to head over to my co-host who was recently referred to as my podcast husband, JR Hildebrand. How are you doing, JR?
I'm good, man. I wasn't sure how I felt about that.
Yeah, you totally ignored it on the podcast and it just made it a bit awkward.
He kept just cranking through it. I was going to have to break in. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to let that slide.
I'm glad you let him live because he got married at the weekend. And I did discuss it.
Congrats, Scott, if you're listening.
For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, you need to head over and listen to the Race F1 podcast episode, which is titled Our Verdict on Who Could Switch from IndyCar to F1, where JR Hildebrand joined them, being Ed Straw and Scott Mitchell, to talk about the likes of Alex Palou, Pato Ward, Colson Herta, etc., on their chances of making it to Formula One. Elsewhere, JR, we need to do some more housekeeping because you drove some really cool swear word stuff at the weekend that you need to tell me about because that's awesome.
Yeah, I drove a 1973 Ferrari 365 GTP4 Daytona Competizione, which was, yeah, a real treat at the Monterey, what is it called now? The Rolex Monterey Motorsport Reunion, formerly the Monterey Historics. I mean, it's cool. It's actually cool. The car was obviously, you know, driving a, I don't know, $5, $10 million Ferrari, not a bad way to spend a weekend, but it's actually a bit more than that for me. Like I grew up going to vintage races. My dad had a vintage race car from when I was like a little kid. So he had the 68 Camaro that was not actually a Trans Am car, had never raced in a Trans Am race, but was a race car from when it was new. And he got it like, I guess in the early 90s. And so he and my uncle, his brother, and, you know, then they would lug me along to the racetrack. So my sort of introduction into motorsports was going to vintage races. So we had season passes at Laguna and Sears Point. So we saw, you know, kart and NASCAR and the drag races and all the pro stuff and loved all of that, obviously. But vintage racing is kind of obviously Goodwood in the UK is really the crown jewel. But in the US, this event this weekend during Car Week at Monterey is really the sort of biggest one that we have over here. It's all the original cars, you know, so there's no fakes, there's no replicas. You know, I think the thing that always stood out to me when I was a kid was just such a variety of what you see, so different sights and sounds and all packed together on one weekend. And, you know, in Europe, there's a bit more of like every group that you see out there is full of drivers that are really working the cars. In the US, it's not quite as much like that, but it's a bit more of, you know, sort of a car show on wheels. But they do occasionally invite some pros like myself out to get behind the wheel. And as long as we sort of look after them, they like to see the cars get worked over a little bit. So it was fun to get a chance to do that. It was actually the first time because I've often been racing on this weekend. It's the first time I've ever driven at the event, which was kind of a cool experience after coming to it for like my entire life, basically. And then I stole my old man's current Trans Am car, which is this pretty cool Pontiac. It's a 1964 Pontiac Tempest that raced in the 1971 Trans Am series. So Trans Am, you know, Camaros and Mustangs and Parnelli Jones and Dan Gurney and George Fulmer and, you know, all of these guys was really, you know, that era was so much the heyday of motorsport. So it's always kind of been what my dad's been attracted to. And, you know, he's got this car, which is a little smoky Eunuch-esque for anybody who's you know, kind of
it's inclined. Not black and gold, though.
It's not black and gold, and it wasn't actually looked after by Smokey himself. But I guess as the story goes, General Motors shut down their factory involvement in motorsports at the end of 1970. And so there was this group of Pontiac engineers that were kind of like, well, like, we've still got budget. Like, we could just go racing, back when that was a thing that you could do. And, but they didn't have a car. And so Herb Adams, who is a sort of legendary Pontiac General Motors engineer, headed up this team, this kind of motley crew. And they took his wife's 64 Pontiac Tempest and turned it into a 1971 Spec Trans Am car. So it's got all the little like trick, you know, cheater, you know, tricks that they couldn't do when they were the factory team, and still has them to this day. Herb's still around. He's come out to help out with the cars. Some of like the old crew still comes out and hangs around. So I managed to convince my dad that I wasn't going to blow it up or crash it into something to compete in the inaugural Corkscrew Hill Climb on Sunday at Monterey, which was just an absolute blast. It was funny that I was looking at I posted videos of both driving the Ferrari and doing the Corkscrew Hill Climb on my Twitter page. And I got like, you know, I've got 7 or 10,000 views or something of the Ferrari, but I've got like 20 something of driving backwards up the Corkscrew in the Pontiac, which is kind of awesome. And just a fun time. Like the thing that's cool about hill climbing is just of any sort is that you get such this wild variety of stuff that shows up. And so for myself and Pat Long and Gunnar Jeanette and the current points leader in the pro Formula D drifting championship was there in his Corvette. Like it was sort of a Mad Max of different stuff out there, but just a super fun thing to participate in and be a part of. So I was talking to Dario Franchitti about this briefly over the weekend, that like going to the racetrack is not always like a restorative experience. Like a lot of times you're kind of worked by the end of the weekend. But coming here is definitely one of those. So I was bummed not to be in Gateway, but did manage to enjoy myself over the weekend.
I imagine any weekend where you get to meet, I guess, and speak to someone like Peter Miles as one example of the cool people who attend that event is I can very much understand why that would be a restorative experience. So we'll file that under one of the random JR musings of the season for the opening of an IndyCar podcast. And I guess we should address last weekend's race. So, obviously you were Joseph Newgarden's teammate, you know him well. We've had him on the podcast a few times this season, which has been really cool. And he's, you know, in the middle of this crazy, random, brilliant, inconsistent, wild season where he's managed to win 4-5 races now, including that one. And still isn't leading the championship, but he seems to still be hitting the spot in some of these kind of Joseph Newgarden-esque tracks that he rocks up to and tends to be quite Joseph Newgarden about things. What did you make of this performance from Joseph, and how does this, you know, what kind of situation does this put him in going into the last two races, do you think?
Well, I think that this one for me was equally about Scott McLaughlin, and then ultimately at the end, David Malukas being able to, you know, fire it up onto the podium. This race really changed shortly before the red flag, when we got sort of off sequence on tire strategies. And that was, it would have been interesting to me to have seen how that last stint would have played out had that not happened, just to understand, just to really know, like, where was Will Power and Marcus Ericsson and Scott Dixon kind of in a more apples to apples version of competing. Pato to me was another guy that ended up just kind of on the back foot in this whole situation, where had he had fresh tires, he was as aggressive as anybody was. The pass that he made on Will Power on the restart that preceded Newgarden and McLaughlin and those guys kind of going to the front by being off strategy, I thought was as impressive a move and kind of what we've come to expect from Pato. And it just didn't end up really yielding him much at the end by the time all was said and done. So I think at the end of the day, this is a place that you know, we've seen Joseph just do what he needs to do to win this race more than once. And he's put himself in marginal situations, just have it with the confidence and the assertiveness required to make it stick. And when you put him out in front here, he's just going to be hard to beat. And there's no way to get around that. So it was not, to me, it was not a surprise. As soon as they got off strategy, I figured he's going to the front and he was going to be the guy to the beat. And so that in the end didn't surprise me, in terms of how this all shook out. McLaughlin to me is establishing himself as, you know, looking to next year, I guess, really more than anything, is establishing himself to me as a real genuine contender. And he's come to a lot of places that you wouldn't necessarily expect him to be sticking it on podiums, being in the top five. You know, I would absolutely still give him the benefit of the doubt of having more learning to do to be in the positions that he's put himself in. And yet he's gone and executed at an extraordinarily high level, completely mistake-free, which we're not seeing from even much more seasoned drivers in the series. So that to me was impressive. If it was, you know, a little under the radar over the course of the weekend by being outshined a bit by his teammates in qualifying and whatever else, just the fact that he's able to keep notching these performances to me was really impressive. Malukas, you know, had the benefit of tires at the end, but still, I think the fact that he got himself into us, and we've seen this from him now a few different times, but not everybody makes good on that when they're in that situation. And as a rookie, to have the confidence, to have the trust of his team, to feel like he can go out there and potentially, you know, he's in like, I don't have a lot to lose mode, but still managing to not be just completely, you know, throwing caution to the wind. And so he's been calculated. He's made good decisions. You know, I think that he's shown a degree of maturity here in the second half of the season as he's also found pace and performance that we'll hear from him here in a minute. But, you know, I think that's definitely, he's turned into quite an exciting prospect, as we head in these last couple of races and certainly into next season, however that ends up looking for him. You know, and like I said earlier, I guess to me, like Pato in particular, Will falls into the same category as just a bit of one that got away in terms of not really being on the right side of the strategy. And that as the track improved, really keeping them from being more thoroughly in the hunt, which was, I think, unfortunate. Like Pato, I think as we've gone through the season, Pato has just ended up flying under the radar in terms of he just hasn't quite been notching the performances, but I can't help but be super impressed by the way that he's been able to stay in the hunt a bit like he did last year. Really. I mean, just the level of, you know, I use maturity, like as if he was immature or something before this, but just the, how just put together he's been. And, you know, he's the decision-making process, and he's gotten everything that's been available to him, you know, that it, I feel bad for him that he's not more thoroughly in the championship hunt here. You know, he's still in it, obviously going into these last couple, but, you know, it would not be crazy to have like five or six of these guys all within a few points of each other, you know, and for, you know, for a few of them like Pato, it just hasn't quite worked out that way. So, you know, we really got to see the guys that are finding their stride towards the end of the year there, do their thing this weekend. And, you know, it makes these last couple of races, like, I, you know, who knows what's going to go on these last couple of races. I don't think that there's a really obvious, stand, you know, like I don't look at these last two and think Joseph Newgarden is going to go dominate these last two races. I don't, you know, Will Power definitely can reassert himself in these last two events. Scott Dixon for sure can assert himself in these last two events. Pato can do it in these last couple of events. So, you know, as close as everybody is, and even though there is a bit of momentum with a couple of guys through the field. I think we're in for a really exciting last two events.
Let's have a cojones on the table moment then. Who does your gut tell you? Don't think too much about it. Just who does your gut tell you is going to win this championship now? It's still, but I'll go first. It's still Dixon for me, but that prediction is being attacked by Joseph Newgarden on an almost weekly basis at the moment. So it's going to be close for sure.
I have a hard time not feeling like Joseph is just going to like will himself to victory here, but like there's something I have a small suspicion that Will Power is going to close this out.
Well, he's leading the championship, so it's definitely not a, you know, unacceptable prediction at this point. He's 3 points ahead of Joseph in the standing. So
yeah,
and he's found, we've spoken about this all year, whether it's whatever you think it is that Will Power's been able to do this season, he's been able to turn poor qualifying results into wild finishes. And there's been more than a few drivers who've said to me that they've been, you know, thinking about how, you know, seeing Will Power in their mirrors and thinking, all right, well, even if I have a bad day, at least Will Power's behind me in the we're fighting for the championship. And then he ends up on the podium and that driver ends up 12th. And everyone's like, what the hell has just happened? Like,
yeah.
How did that happen? So do you know what? It's pointing that way. Power's having a phenomenal year, that's for sure. Newgarden, out of Power, Newgarden and Dixon. Newgarden has got the majority of the better stats for the last two races of the season. But I also feel like Joseph really struggled in qualifying at Laguna last year.
And at Portland.
And maybe that was symptomatic of, you know, a bit of a run that they were having in the second half of last season. And that's not going to be something that's going to be, you know, representative of this season. But is you know, the inconsistencies this season are still, you know, going to be a worry. But the fact that he's won the fifth race has really, really opened this up for him now, hasn't it? And put him in a, you know, a pretty phenomenal position. And I, like you, think if there's anyone who can basically just will themselves into a championship, then it's going to be Newgarden manifesting that, isn't it? So that's interesting. I want to touch on Lucas and just kind of tee this up before we jump over to him, because it's always quite awkward to talk about a driver who's just had a good weekend with them, you know, sat in front of you, and you know, them feeling quite awkward about, you know, kind of answering questions that are obviously positive. But it's been it has been an up and down season for him, and the word that jumped out to me there when, you know, you were talking about him taking that right almost to extract that pace and not fearing the consequences maybe so much, almost like a predatorial thing, isn't it? And there's been cases this season where he hasn't done that. You know, the big one that stands out to me was Barber in qualifying, when, you know, Pato got the pole and basically said, I don't care if he was faster than me, he should have backed off. Like, that's how we do this in IndyCar. Like, you need to back up and create a gap for yourself. And David was like, you know, I was trying not to hold up the guy behind me. You know, it's, and you can understand both sides of that argument, but, you know, an experienced driver, you say Pato is an experienced driver, but someone who, you know, has been doing this for a little while now and has been extremely successful, knew exactly what to do in that scenario. And maybe the rookie didn't. And maybe that, you know, what we saw last weekend was a development of that. But he's just an interesting case because his rookie resume, let's say, was not fantastic until he won the Formula Regional Americas Championship in 2020 and then was second in Indy Lights. And the thing that made his second in Indy Lights so impressive in 2021 was how far he pushed Kyle Kirkwood into that season and, you know, legitimately could have won that championship if, you know, a couple of races had gone slightly differently. And that was all, you know, against the backdrop of his dad being heavily invested in his team. And, you know, it's just been a really interesting rise. And I think we didn't have enough data when he came into the IndyCar series to kind of look at him and go, this is, you know, we know exactly what we're going to expect from this guy. We don't, you know, we know his level of preparation or how he approaches things or his attitude or what he does in certain situations, because we basically only had 1 year of him seeing him at that level. So I think that's one of the things that has made this season so interesting. And I think there's definitely been some, you know, we'll talk to him in a minute, and I'm sure pit stops will come up. And as much as he admits mistakes on his side, there's definitely been some troublesome pit stops from the coin side as well. I'm sure they'd be the first to admit that have cost them quite a lot of positions this year. But there was definitely some sort of turning point halfway through the year at the 500 where they spent basically every day together. And, you know, whether that was him in the engineering room or with the mechanics or whatever it is, you know, kind of setting up a bit of a bit of camaraderie and stuff like that. And, you know, he's basically raced his way into the silly season, because either Ganassi or McLaren are going to be looking for a driver next season. Those teams are going to have two choices: to either go with a more established driver who potentially has been out of the series for a while, someone like Ryan Hunter-Reay, who's had a year off, or it's going to be a risky rookie, let's say, which is, you know, David definitely falls into that category. We've seen basically half a season of really top level performance from him. And whether he can replicate that over the course of a full season with the top team is yet to be seen. But I think the fact that those teams are looking at him seriously, and I think, you know, one of the reasons why David's been potentially quite coy in the media over his future is because it genuinely does depend on, you know, what happens with Palou and how that impacts things. So no one really knows, you know, what's going to happen yet. But he's definitely said that he's willing to race outside of his dad's team. You know, his dad Henry is you know, has made no secret about the fact that he wants, you know, to have like a race winning team of his own in the future. And at the moment is obviously partnered with Dale Coyne. But, you know, David has said, you know, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but said, you know, he kind of knows at some point in the future they're going to have to part ways at some point, and he's going to have to race against his dad's team. So it's not like a Lance Stroll situation where, you know, we're committing David to wherever his dad is for the future. So he genuinely is. If you're listening to this and you know, maybe you're struggling to follow this silly season, because to be honest, I am as well. I'm right there with you. The fact that David's dad is involved in this team is not necessarily a sign that he's not going to go anywhere. I think it depends a lot on what happens with the Alex Palou situation, but definitely a stellar second half of the season. Was there, you know, JR, you've been incredibly successful on short ovals like Gateway, and know what it takes to really extract the maximum out of the car on those types of circuits. Was there anything, I know he had the tyres, that's obviously a given, but was there anything that you saw that really marked him out in this performance, that, you know, there was anything particularly impressive about how he went about this and how he achieved the result in the end?
I guess I think that it just comes down to, you know, in my experience, at least, you end up needing to be able to do a couple of things to be able to really excel, even if you're on better tires or whatever, and tires kind of help you for a period of time to do this, but you need to have a degree of understanding for Gateway in particular, because you're slowing down on both ends of the track, and it's not as much of a momentum game just in terms of your average speed at Gateway. It's more like acceleration, deceleration. Like at Iowa, there's a part of it that you're just trying to carry as much speed through the corners because you're in the corners for a long period of time relative to how long you're on the straights. At Gateway, it's more the other way around as far as short ovals go, which is that you're doing a big, long acceleration between the two ends of the track. And so that changes a little bit of the dynamic between what you're prioritizing in the car. And it basically ends up being like, you're trying to extend the straightaway on both ends into the corner. So, you know, what struck me watching David and watching the guys as the drivers that could work their way through traffic, they were able to do two things really well. One was, even with a car right in front of them, kind of bend in late and get underneath and get the run off. It struck me that you had to be able to do that going to turn one, maybe because it cooled off, and so the like gearing and stuff was different. You had to be able to get them like right off the corner off of four. So that was the only way you saw passes get made down the front straight, down the back straight, because it's slower through one and two than it is through three and four. So you're going all the way up through the gears, just being able to get that to, you know, get the car angled right underneath the car in front of you, pick up the throttle early, be able to get that more immediate punch off the corner, even if it was like not getting the initial throttle as soon, but just getting to full throttle earlier than the car in front of you. That was the difference maker there. And then having the confidence in a lot of these situations, you know, guys were blocking to the inside. So having the confidence then to just fire it in on the outside, you know, stay on throttle long enough and have the confidence in the car that you're not going to end up either washing up or getting loose. I mean, even in qualifying, we saw a lot of guys, and it's more common that you see it in three, in one and two, but kind of bending down to the apex in three and four, having moments there, like once they got past that, you know, it's like a third of the way through the corner. Once they got past the car getting into a set there, that at that point it seemed like most cars just went to a little bit of understeer all the way to the exit. But, you know, in the race, when you've got varying fuel loads and the track is kind of changing, just having the confidence that you can push the car through that initial phase of the corner, maybe not on the line that you've been on up through that point in the race. You know, and so it's the difference between for David, I think what particularly impressed me about watching him was just that it basically seemed like as soon as it was available to him to do those things better than the car in front of him, he just kind of immediately started doing them. Like, it wasn't like it took him 20 laps to build up to making some of those moves. Which, you know, I guess looking back to it actually wasn't my rookie year. It was my second year in the series at Iowa with the DW12 in the first year that I had a bit of the same experience, that it was just like, you just all of a sudden notice that you can kind of do something a little differently than the guys around you can. And it's just like, it is the most awesome feeling that you can have in race cars, because you just feel like you're in full cheat code mode at that point. But it seemed like David was there, and just not everybody takes advantage of that. Even more seasoned drivers don't, you know, you're talking about Newgarden and Pato and guys like that as the other drivers that will just immediately click into that, I'm going to the front mode. And so it was cool to see that from David, and, you know, definitely just altogether an impressive weekend. It feels like he's thoughtful about where he's going. It feels like he's thoughtful about how he approaches the car. I think being at Coyne as opposed to being at a bigger team, you know, I assume that that's a little bit less stress. You know, the environment is something that, you know, I think plays into that probably, but no doubt he's taking advantage of it and doing a great job.
Before we move on, we've got a couple of quick questions that we had from Twitter, which we definitely will get into next week. We're just trying to crack through this episode because we've got an extremely infectious, excited, just cool rookie on the other end of the line here after the break. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with David and Lucas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, here he is, David Malukas. Welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast. For what I'm ashamed to say is actually, I think, your first appearance with us. So welcome. Thanks for joining us and taking the time after what was a pretty decent weekend for you. Have you landed yet? Have you recovered?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. No, the race was, man, what a race that was. I'm still trying to like recover. I couldn't sleep the past 2 days from how excited I've been, and every dream has been like different scenarios of how I maybe could have done things differently to maybe get like that one more spot. But it's been an amazing 2 days, especially with all the support from the fans, from people that I've known since go-karting. It's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I saw some pictures of you kind of hugging the trophy, and you kind of belted it into the car with the seatbelt and stuff like that. Did you even sleep with it? Or there was definitely a picture with it in your bed.
Yeah, I slept with it. Yeah, which was actually kind of uncomfortable. Probably why I couldn't sleep the first night.
give us a window into your mind after that result, because there was so much going on. There was Joseph Newgarden lending you his champagne and you not being able to drink the champagne because you're not old enough yet. And then kind of had the moment in the press conference where you were like, I'm sat next to Joseph Newgarden, and just kind of, I guess people who maybe don't know you so well got to see that kind of infectious enthusiasm that you have. But yeah, I guess give us a window into your mind, you know, what that felt like after the race. And do you allow that to feel like a win for that, you know, for the achievement that you made there, actually scoring your first IndyCar podium? Or has it just made you, you know, even more determined to actually, you know, get that feat and get that win, I guess?
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, I am an IndyCar fan. So it's, you know, when I'm sitting next to Newgarden or McLaughlin, I ended up pronouncing his name wrong, so I had to fix that up.
How did you say it?
I said McLaughlin. It's Locke. So then I was like, well, that makes sense. Penske care about details. So, we definitely took that as a win. You know, the team and I, it was a great race, I think, from both parts. It was good strategy and everything just went very well. We had a really good car at the end of the day that was competing with Penske's. So, yeah, no, it was very emotional. I mean, I know a lot of people, I was crying. I know a lot of people were crying. Thankfully, I still had my helmet on, though, when everybody was hugging, so nobody could see my tears. And then I wiped my face with the towel, so it kind of just looked like I was, you know, just sweating. So it was great. Yeah, running through after that, you know, going to the podium. Well, right when the race finished, you know, I was like, this is so awesome. Great. What do I do? It's like, I've never been in this situation, so I didn't know what to do. So I remember Ross just told me to follow Newgarden round, and I was like, okay, that wasn't right, but we ended up figuring it out. And then going to the podium, I was nervous. I was like, man, I haven't done this in a while. There's a lot more people. There's bigger champagne bottles. So I looked at my bottle and I was like, it's just a Martinelli. It's a small little apple cider. thankfully, you know, I was able to just follow McLaughlin, whatever he did, and get on the podium. And I think everything went smoothly. And Newgarden actually gave me his champagne. Very cool. So give me the real stuff. And they actually talked about that at the press conference. And I was just, I didn't understand why they give me the apple cider, which just doesn't make any sense because I'm spraying it at them. Right. And they're spraying the alcohol on me. So I'm like, it makes no sense to give me the apple cider. Like, you know, I was like, we could just make some rule. You give me the real stuff and I can get a nice big, you know, champagne bottle, enjoy the moment. And then I just won't drink it. You know, we'll just make a rule. Like it'll be fine. It was a lot of fun, and I tried being like formal and like answer questions at the press conference, but I just couldn't hold it together. I was living my dream.
I'm sure everyone who was watching or listening or got to read some of your quotes after that will be happy with the fact that you didn't hold it all in and you did let it all out, because it's great to see that. Sometimes we don't see that human reaction from drivers, and it's really nice to see that from people, especially when you can tell that it means so much and that it's not, you know, it's very clear with you that it's not, you know, forced or anything like that. It's just kind of just emerges, doesn't it? You know, the kind of reaction to it. I guess we should kind of recap your season a little bit, in the sense of, I guess it feels like this result maybe has been coming or something, you know, some sort of breakthrough performance maybe that people really sort of sat up and take notice has been coming since maybe the 500, where you had a really good, you know, month of May there and some really strong performances through that month. And I think that kind of put some people on notice that you were, you know, really here in IndyCar and here to stay. But since then you've really, you know, improved and moved on since then. And obviously that culminated in the podium last weekend. So I guess, what do you feel like, you know, has kind of changed through the season that has allowed you to kind of access this performance now? You know, I think we spoke about this at the Indy Road Course. Obviously the 500 is a kind of month and something unusual in itself, but it kind of seemed to give you some momentum and you've kind of just hit the ground running since then. So what are the reasons behind that, do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's since the start of the season, it was, you know, I making rookie mistakes myself and just getting comfortable with everybody at the team. I don't really know what I want from the car. The team's trying to figure it out with me and trying to give me, you know, details. And so the first half of the season was a lot of just, you know, leeching off of Takuma's setup, because I didn't really know what to say, which way to go, what feeling is what. Everything was new to me. So let's just say my feedback was awful at the beginning of the season. But it kind of felt like in the month of May helped a lot. You know, the fact that I'm with the team every single day, I'm always with them. We're building these relationships, these connections. And on top of it, we're figuring out what I want from the car and what to tell the team. And I'm starting to know these feelings, these new things. And I think ever since the month of May, we finally got like going in the right direction and follow that path. Haven't really got off of it. And every time we go to a new track, we're starting with a better car, of what I'm more familiar with and what we've worked on to get there. So every time we just keep getting that little bit better. And I feel like that's just kind of what it's been. And with having a better car, my confidence increases and I can show the true performance of myself. I can show the performance of what the car can do. So all around just gets better. And having the relationship with Ross, my engineer, a spotter with Poncho, all that building up, it just, you end up getting this connection and, you know, we start doing things like I'm singing on the radio and, you know, we just get really comfortable. And although like racing can be very stressful and intense at times, it's, you know, we try to do our little jokes there and stuff and congratulate each other on different moments. It's good.
It definitely feels like, you know, not that Takuma, you know, wasn't welcoming when you first came into the team, but it definitely feels like he is kind of, you know, really accepted you as his equal almost, and that you can trial each other's setups, you know, the feedback and stuff. You're happy to take each other's opinions, and for someone to be able to do that with Takuma in their first season as a rookie, I think is a real kind of highlight of what you've been able to achieve. And I guess kind of building on that, the team itself, you know, I don't want to go too far back through Dale Coyne's history, but if we look at the kind of the recent rookies that the team's had, obviously the last year's champion, Romain Grosjean, obviously another one. So I guess, do you feel like the team is kind of, maybe it's not built around having rookies, but it's a place that rookies can really excel if you come into it with the right attitude?
Yeah, I mean, going into it, that was one of the reasons why we chose Dale Coyne Racing. Of course, it's 20 minutes down the street from me, so I'm always nearby. That's another thing that can really help when I make mistakes. Like at Nashville, I can come down and get some donuts and we can still build a connection with the team. But yeah, the team is just so friendly. You know, I remember the first test we did at Barber. I was so stressed. You know, it's an Indy car. I'm freaking out. It was like a dream of mine. And there's so much going through my head, what to do. I'm like, the clutch is on the steering wheel now. Like, how do I launch? And now we have an engine guy, Honda's telling me all these different information I've never heard before. I'm like about to explode. And then at the end of the day, you know, the Dale Coyne just comes up to me, and the mechanics, everybody just, hey, at the end of the day, it's just another car. Like, let's just go out there and have fun. And I feel like that's kind of been the mentality throughout this season, that they just make me feel so comfortable with it. And they just, they make me feel like I'm at home, and that it's just, we're all just a bunch of good friends and family that just want to work on a car and make it do well. So having that environment has definitely helped me get that confidence to make sure that car needs to be where it needs to be.
What's been the biggest challenge for David Maloukas, the rookie this season? I guess a lot of the things you kind of would have predicted, I imagine, like the physicality of the series, you know, some of the hot races that we get through the year and stuff like that. That's all stuff that people have talked about before and that I guess you can predict. Maybe you can't always adapt perfectly to that, but you kind of know about it. But what are the kind of things that you maybe didn't know at the start of the season that have really, you know, come to the fore now?
Yeah, talk about physicality. That's definitely the main one. That is, IndyCar is a very tough car to drive. And there's little tricks that you always learn, like on ovals. I ended up learning how to, going down the straight to like let my hands rest. I ended up putting my elbow inside of the, inside my seat. I kind of like lock it in there, and then it holds the steering wheel in place, and I can like let my hands recover. Massive help. You know, there's little things that you always like learn as a driver when you have time in the car, like, how can I like make this easier for myself? So that was quite funny. But the main thing that I'm still learning quite a bit is race strategy. You know, it's that's something with like Indy Lights that you never really get to learn. There's no pit stops. The races aren't as long to have that reason for pit stops. There's no fuel saving, no tire saving. There's a little bit of tire saving in Indy Lights, but mainly the fuel saving and how to strategize your push to pass. It's like, for me, it's just go, go, go. I need to gain positions. But realistically, you don't want to, it's kind of like, do I really waste all this fuel and this push to pass to get this one pass, when if we do a pit stop, he can just undercut or overcut me and I have to do it again? So it kind of comes down to how to strategize, when to use it, when to not. And that's obviously just the only way I feel like you could build it, is just by just doing it over and over again, and you just learn. Also driving behind a lot of veterans like Will Power. I remember at Barber, I learned so much from him. I remember I fell back a few positions on the start and I was like, man, this sucks. But then Power got around me and I was just following his line, his fuel saving lines, how he like carries the momentum in, but like, you know, isn't on the brake. And I was like, oh my God, this is actually amazing. Like, I'm learning so much. And then Ross, my engineer, is on the radio. He's like, wow, your fuel saving is like really good right now. And the speed's good. I was like, yeah, cause I got Will Power in front. Like, I mean, I have a cheat sheet. This is amazing.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Yeah, David, I think with respect to the race, I'm just curious, you know, you obviously made progress throughout the race, but you know, towards the end, you really came to life. And I'm just curious, you know, sometimes, yeah, I've certainly been in a position where the track changes a lot and, you know, suddenly you kind of start to feel it coming to you. I just want to know, what was that experience like? And was that something that was kind of like the flip of a switch? That suddenly it was really there, and that gave you that confidence. Because not every driver, even once they feel that, you know, really goes and assertively takes advantage of it. So I just want you to walk me through, like, what was that kind of experience like of feeling, like, oh, okay, you know, now I got something to go play with, and then going and doing it.
Yeah, it was multiple different topics that kind of added onto it. And which mainly just started from the practice that we had the day before. It was around that similar time when the sun was setting. And the farther that session went, I mean, of course, everybody gets quicker, you know, when the track cools, but it seemed like we made a massive jump compared to everybody else. So we knew that the cooler the track got, the quicker we were going into the race day. And then once we had the red flag and that massive delay, you know, the whole team was started getting very excited. We all saw like kind of the stars aligning. And the way we did the strategy is mainly just because at the end we had just clear roads. So we're like, well, we might as well just stay out. You know, the leaders are stuck behind traffic because it's kind of tough to pass that gateway. So, I mean, we have clear air. Let's just keep going. We're actually going quicker than the leaders. So we stayed out as long as possible. And when we pitted, it was like two laps before the red flag came out. So we had brand new tires compared to Power and Pato. And they also had to do fuel saving, which we didn't. So going into it, I was like, wow, we have a very good chance for at least third place here. And then, I mean, as soon as we went out, as soon as the green flag went, the car was just like, it was on rails. And I was like, oh my God, this is very good. And I think we have a very good opportunity. And once I got around Power and Pato, that's when I saw the two Penske's in front, and that's when the nerves started coming in. And Poncho was like, all right, you see them, go get them. And yeah, we hunted them down so quickly. But the Penske's are tough to get that last little bit, you know, just to get a run, especially because everybody was going so quick. Going into turn one, you're hitting the limiter before we even start finish line. So then you just stop and you can't really get that much more. But thankfully we caught lap traffic. I was able to get that little bit more and get on McLaughlin. I actually pronounced his name wrong. I remember that, but, yeah, it was, we just knew going into it that we were going to have a good car. And once I did one or two laps, I was like, yeah, this car is on rails, especially watching, you know, Pato and Power, you know, they were definitely a little bit more on the loose end than us. I was like, yeah, this is, the stars are aligning.
I guess it's funny you mentioned kind of, you know, racing against the Penske's and even, I guess, the Ganassi's to a certain extent as well. And being, you know, sat next to Joseph Newgarden and stuff like that as well. And I know your name is being talked about a lot more now when it comes to like the silly season and what might happen next. And, you know, I don't want to take away from what you've already discussed and what you're building with Dale Coyne, but just talk a little bit about, you know, as not just as an IndyCar rookie, but as a fan of the sport, to be kind of, you know, mentioned in the same breadth as a team like Ganassi, McLaren or something like that. You know, what does that mean to you? Because it's, yeah, I think it, if anything, it just shows how impactful your year has been, at least.
It means a lot, you know, going, you know, throughout my whole racing season, it's always been trying to get to IndyCar. That's kind of always been the goal. And so you work so hard to finally get to IndyCar, but then once you're there, you have a very stressful first year, at least for me, because I feel like you go into it and you need to prove that you can be there and you can stay there and be an IndyCar driver, you know? And so, especially with the way my season started, it was not really going the direction I wanted it to. So the fact that, you know, I've put in so much hard work, the team's put in so much hard work, my parents, everybody, just so much people into it. And the fact that now it's, you know, finally the results are coming in and it's showing there. It means so much to be put, you know, my name to be put with these people that I've, you know, watched on TV and like pretended to race against inside my house on like, you know, like a scooter or something. You know, it's a crazy experience to me. The fact that now my name is being, you know, paired up side by side with these big names. It means a lot.
Where do you see, so you've got two more races, Portland, Laguna. I guess the first question is how do you think about, you know, how do you think about your chances going into those two events? You know, are you kind of in the, we'll show up and see where we roll off the truck, or do you already have some kind of building confidence that you'll be able to show up at these places and be competitive like you have been for this last string?
Well, I know from last year with Grosjean at Laguna, he was very impressive there and also did that very impressive pass on Johnson, which was a bit controversial.
Pass, quote unquote. Pass.
Yeah.
Impressive with respect to how that they both made it beyond the corner. Yeah,
I think totally. That pass shows how powerful the IndyCar tanks are, that you can do some bumping here and there. But he finished second there and they had a good strategy and a good car. So I think we're also testing there on Monday. So I think we're going to have a bit of a learning curve there going into it. But Portland, a bit of an unknown. I think that's going to be kind of, once we get off the truck, we'll see where we're at. But, you know, I know that since the month of May, we've been having a car that I've liked more. Surprisingly, it's just, I'm trying to make it feel more like an Indy Lights car. I don't know why that took me half a season to figure out. But we've been building off of that car that I've liked and always unloading with a better car at each track. So I think going to Portland, there's a good chance. But all I know is the rookie championship is going to be pretty heated up on these last two races, just because I know the Ray Hall guys, they've managed to figure out their car with these recent races. So I know Lundgaard's going to be there. So it's going to be a good, nice little battle between us for these last two.
So I want to pick something out you just said, you know, sort of working on, I was going to ask, just what is something that has, it seemed like something's clicked sort of since in the second half of the year. You mentioned making it feel more like an Indy Lights car. So what has that entailed, and what in your mind? I haven't driven this current Indy Lights car. Maybe just walk us through what that's like and what the differences have been and what you've been trying to get to.
Yeah. So Indy Lights, it's kind of one of those cars where to go left, you need to go right. I mean, it's just so much on the oversteer end, and that's the only way it's going to work. And so in the beginning of the season, the Indy car, to me, it was just obviously a much heavier car, a lot of different feedback. And also there's so much, many different things that, you know, you have on the steering wheel that you have at your disposal. I don't know how much, what I can say. I don't know if Honda's going to get mad at me. But let's just say there's a lot more tools that you need to learn.
Yeah, you've got some tools there. Yeah, that you don't have in any lights car.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of just learning what those can help and how I can, you know, give feedback back to Honda. And just in the beginning, it just felt like the car was much more on the understeer side, and I didn't really know what I wanted. And the team would ask me for feedback, and I was like, well, I don't know what this feeling is or what to tell you. I don't know what's quicker, what's not. And the month of May, we ended up, it was very helpful for me and the team because we were with each other every single day. So we managed to build the chemistry, and I was able to try so many different things because we had so much testing. Of course, it's on an oval, a bit different, but we also had the NDGP. And I was finally able to realize, I was like, maybe, you know, it's like, why not I just like make this thing feel like an Indy Lights car? I was like, can we make this thing just like, if I go into a corner, I'm just on the verge of spinning out. Let's just do that. Like, let's make the biggest change ever. And so like, okay, yeah, we can do that. And so we did that, which was, it was definitely overboard, but we managed to slowly work our way back from there. And it was just much better. And so it kind of just clicked. My confidence ended up going up, and I was able to really show what the car has for store. And obviously, because the more you push the car, the more you're on the limit, that's when you finally figure out the answers of what you need. You know, if you're under driving a corner, you don't really know what you needed because you were under driving. So it's very different. And once you get the temperatures go up of the tires, you're pushing a lot more. So everything kind of just becomes very clear what you need.
Cool. So I guess as a follow-up, looking ahead, we'll say for the sake of argument that you're staying put at Dale Coyne Racing. What do you think? I mean, I guess, what do you think the transition is into next year, and what do you think you guys could achieve together?
Well, it's there's a lot of things on the list, you know, that we need to improve. There's going to be a lot of work in the off season. You know, from my end, I think it's going to be a lot of pit stop work, you know, because that's going into the season. It's definitely gotten a lot better, especially from the start of the season. It was kind of a disaster from my end. I've never done any sort of pit stop. So it's going to be working on trying to get that better, you know, the ins and outs, especially on ovals. little bit nerve-wracking. You know, you have to push the car as hard as you can leaving the pits, but your tires are freezing cold and you're sliding around. So, you know, that's going to build up, and just making sure that I, you know, always on that Honda simulator, making sure that I know exactly what I need from the car. And I think from the team side, I know there's going to be a lot of pit stop work. You know, I feel like we've been a little bit on the slower end, but we've already been getting a lot better, having new camera angles, a lot more data, new heart rate monitors, actually, from all the pit crew. So we can see, you know, if that is like involved with mistakes. So there's a lot of data going into it. We're talking with a lot of different people. We're trying to build up on that, because especially from my side, I really want to see Dale Coyne Racing succeed. You know, being like a Chicago local to me is very cool. Like, I already feel like I'm family there. And I know from both ends, everybody wants to make sure Dale Coyne can compete with these big name teams.
How much comfort does that give you being with this team? Just like there's sort of a hometown vibe all the way around.
Yeah. Especially for a rookie, you know, I think it's like the best scenario that you could ever want. I just feel so comfortable. Like, I feel like I can make a mistake or do something. And then, you know, it's like, hey, it's fine. You know, this is racing. That's how it is. But like, let's say if I were to go to some big team, like Ganassi or Penske, I would be afraid to like say anything or do anything. Oh my God, this is Ganassi. You don't have to be all careful and everything. So with Dale, I feel like I could just be myself, be open. And I think it also goes from both ends. I can be very honest with what I want from the car and don't feel like I'm about to say something stupid. And then if I do, you know, it's just, yeah, that was stupid, but you know, whatever.
It's awesome to have a rookie on the show again. And I guess let's give the listeners an opportunity to learn something a little bit more unusual about you. So if there's one thing people might not know about David Blukas, what might that be?
Oh, an unusual thing.
It doesn't necessarily have to be unusual, but give us something that the guys listening at home might not know about you. Something that isn't obvious.
I don't know if it's like unknown, but I'm like a massive kind of like gamer nerd type thing. So it's like I definitely spend too many hours on my computer playing very strategy nerdy games, or like Dungeons and Dragons, you know.
Okay, like what? Okay.
Like I
that definitely, yeah, qualifies.
Yeah, shout out to Critical Role. You know, I watch their stuff. Definitely on the nerdy side of things, different strategy games. Like,
where
Hearts
can
of
people
Iron.
do you have a Twitch channel?
No, I don't.
I follow you while you're gaming, or are you just totally solo?
Yeah.
Just doing
no,
it for yourself.
I don't do the streaming stuff. Yeah.
I can't.
I don't know. I can't really do the streaming stuff. I feel like I'd be a bit nerve-wracking. I don't know. I feel like I want to be myself when I know there's a camera while I'm playing games. But just because, you know, when you get into games, you're so focused. But then, yeah, I don't know. I feel like you have to be careful with what you say and stuff. So I probably wouldn't do that. But yeah, I'm definitely in the more realm of like strategy, nerdy games, not like Call of Duty or like GTA. So.
The thing I like as well, I know we spoke about this preseason, is that you really represent Lithuania with your kind of family heritage as well. Tell us briefly about that, because I think it's really cool that you know, maybe people see the flag when you do stuff, like, especially when you are kind of like, you know, if you're on the podium or whatever and you have a flag, and people might not necessarily know the story behind that.
Yeah, of course. You know, I've always represented my Lithuania roots, although I was born here, and I definitely represent as American. You know, my parents, they come from Lithuania. So I'm, and you know, both of them grew up there and came over. So my blood is definitely Lithuanian, and I've been there multiple times, and a lot of family and friends, and it's a very close knit community. So it's very cool. The flag that we were actually holding up after the podium was a Telšiai flag, which is a local village inside Lithuania. And it's like kind of like a very like good community. And that's where my parents grew up. So it was like a big deal for everybody over there. And, I love the connection that we have over there, and everybody just, yeah, they're so enthusiastic about it. And Lithuanian community, it definitely goes strong.
Awesome. Well, David Malukas, thanks so much for joining us on the Race IndyCar podcast. David also co-hosts the Pit Lane Parley podcast as well. So you can definitely check him out there more regularly, kind of after the races and stuff like that as well. So thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon, maybe with an IndyCar Rookie of the Year title, with all being well for you.
Yes, hopefully. Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Although, whichever way the rookie championship goes, I feel like every single rookie deserves it. I feel like the rookie championship has been very impressive from all the drivers.
I was going to say, we'll have you back on one way or the other, man. So
awesome. Thank you, guys.
No extra pressure.
You've raced with Christian and Carton, right? So that's kind of like a regurgitated battle.
Yeah, actually, recently there's a picture that resurfaced from us that we, you know, we took a picture back in, I think it was like in 2016. So I think we should remake that photo for sure.
Awesome. Well, Dave and Lucas, thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Race IndyCar Podcast. That's all for this week's episode. Don't forget, we've got Portland and Laguna Seca coming up to finish the season, and all the news and features that you need, you'll find on the-race.com. If there's anything about this podcast that you want to email us about, if you've got any questions, I'm sure David won't mind if I text him a few questions after the show, if we get some in from the listeners, you can email us podcasts, that's with an S at the end, at the-race.com. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Race IndyCar Podcast.
The Athletic.